Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hey folks, you might not know this if you've only listened to the free Tuesday and Thursday shows, but you're missing one of the most exciting 90 minutes of the week, our After Party podcast with me and Feminazi Kimberly Johnson every Friday. Go to BobSeskaShow.com. Again, that's BobSeskaShow.com and sign up to hear the After Party while supporting our completely independent podcast for just $10 a month. Not only do you get lots of outrageous conversation about sex, drugs, politics, and rock and roll, but you also get the post-mortem shows for no extra charge, as well as access to our community blog, where you can post your own articles. So go right now to BobSeskaShow.com or Patreon.com/BobSeskaShow and subscribe. Thank you in advance, and now let the cartoons begin.
Broadcasting from Resistance Headquarters, relentlessly fighting back against the clown dictator and his regime of deplorables.
Never give up, never surrender.
This is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where fashion sits? Different types who wear a day coat, pants with stripes or cutaway coat, perfect fits. Dressed up like a $1 million trooper, trying mighty hard to look like Gary Cooper. Come, let's mix where Rockefellers walk with sticks or umbrellas in their mitts.
Bob Seska! We could not talk or talk forever and still find things to not talk about.
The Bob Seska Show!
Yeah, I'm thinking about Trump's stupid tuxedo. Totally look like Peter Boyle and Young Frankenstein out there in England. Or Mr. Creosote. Take your pick. From our nation's capital, it is Tuesday, June 4, 2019, and this is the Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com, the greatest goddamn soap ever. Hi, what's up? My name is Bob. What's happening?
Hello, Bob.
Hi, day 866 of the Trump crisis, day 28 of the constitutional crisis. Almost a month for the constitutional crisis, huh? 517 days until the 2020 presidential election, and of course, sitting right over there, my good friend Buzz Burbank. Hi, Buzz.
Hi, Bob. Hi, everybody.
Buzz.
You okay now?
I think I'm all set. I needed like 12 takes to get the opening commercial right.
But we're here. Yeah. And you know what? I figured it out. I'm the Lawrence O'Donnell to your Rachel Maddow.
Stop the hammering.
No, I look at it this way. I'm often wrong about things, but in an authoritative and entertaining way.
Yeah, that's right.
So that's why I'm here. Hey, listen, if you're still doing that Tradio feature, I have a Mueller a Time t-shirt I'd like to sell. I'm fine. The pressure has not gotten to me. I'm fine. I'm not worried about any of this. Since it's already been decided, I'm sure President Biden will take care of everything.
That's what I heard. That's right. What I've been told.
Already been decided. Everybody go home.
Do you have any more jokes for us?
No. Did I have any in the first place?
Oh, wait. That's, one more. There, see? One more. Managed to work another
bonus.
I'm
actually better in real situations, I think. So let's do that.
So, you know, one of the things we were talking about before we started recording the show, our show within a show, or our show before the show, in which no one is actually listening except us. We were talking about this deal with MSNBC and the New York Times, which to me is just the most absurd thing I've ever heard. Of course, this is playing into the entire false trope that Rachel Maddow is some sort of raving ideologue, which I have a really hard time with. You know, sometimes Lawrence O'Donnell goes into that territory, but Rachel, no, I don't know.
You've been lumped in with her now, so.
Yes, I'll get to that in just a second.
It's official. you know, I don't know. This troubles me, and I'll tell you why. First of all, I see some Glenn Greenwald folk liking this and taking part in this discussion. So you've taught me that that's concerning. Mm-hmm. But the other part of this is, this is another purity test on the part of liberals. I'm sorry, but it is. And we don't need a purity test. The New York Times is not perfect. But let me emphasize that the Times, with the Washington Post a close second, has broken all the ice on these stories. They're the people who've unveiled the Trump administration and the Trump campaign and all the other criminals associated with it. We would be lost without the New York Times. And I saw people responding to posts about this saying, I'm canceling today. I'm already canceling.
No.
The legitimate press already has enough troubles. Again, the New York Times, it is my view, they're not perfect. And it's made up of a lot of people. A lot of people put that newspaper together. And some of them face facts, just like in your real life, just like at your job. Some of them are conservatives.
Yeah.
And so don't be surprised if some of that gets through in the newspaper. Mm-hmm. But it does not in any way compare to the volume of material produced by their news reporters and the brilliance espoused by their editorialists, by their columnists.
Right.
You can't take that away from them, and we would be lost without them. So as unhappy as you may be about this policy, and I am too, I think it's a little goofy. I don't know that I'm as suspicious that it's some kind of conspiracy. But it is a little concerning. And the policy, just to clarify, is no more news reporters on Rachel and Lawrence, because they are considered very partisan shows. Mm-hmm. And they can still go on Brian Williams at 11, because his show is considered apparently less partisan.
I don't know.
Opinion writers, meanwhile, are still free to go from the Times, are still free to go on Rachel and on Lawrence. So it's, but I'm just saying I agree with the policy, but I'm saying first let's understand what the policy is, and let's understand that the paper is imperfect and that it's made up of a lot of different people, some of whom are conservatives, but you cannot, none of this outweighs the blessing the New York Times has brought to us in its coverage of the Trump administration. Again, it's another circular firing squad here, liberals shooting other liberals, and I have a real problem with that.
Yeah.
Let's keep our focus. God, this drives me crazy. Let's keep our focus on the real villain here, the real criminal here.
And you know, the left, Buzz, has a tendency to take one thing and extrapolate that out into a categorical condemnation of whoever. In this case, the New York Times, for example. Fox News Channel is awful. AM talk radio is horrible. I mean, there are real criminals out there. The New York Times, like any one of us, makes mistakes. And I'm about to talk about some of the mistakes I made just on the Indie Music Countdown, for God's sake. I made factual errors on the Indie Music Countdown.
It's the trouble with specializing, by the way. Then the nerds come after you in that field. Right. And you don't stand a chance.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, with the New York Times, sometimes they screw up. Sometimes they don't do exactly what you want them to do. But you're exactly right, Buzz. You know what? You're exactly right insofar as the New York Times has done some of the greatest reporting on especially the Trump administration, especially the Russian attack, all of those things and everything orbiting around all of those topics. The New York Times has been one of the go-to sources for all of this. And I think we need to bear that in mind. At the same time, I think they're misrepresenting what Rachel Maddow does. And I want to single out Rachel Maddow specifically, because that's the show that every night, my face, Kimberly Johnson's face, your face, all of our faces are pressed up against our TV screens, just absorbing osmotically every bit of information on Rachel's show.
Yeah,
and there is no greater friend to traditional straight news reporters on cable news than Rachel Maddow. She is the one who not only hosts them on her show and values their reporting, but is also extraordinarily complimentary and supportive of that process, and actually eschews the idea of hosting the usual pundits in their little squares that we see all throughout the rest of cable news.
Or the big panel, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you're going to find more partisanship one way or the other on Chuck Todd's show, for God's sake, or some other program. Yeah. I mean, Morning Joe, for example, is loaded with partisans. It's just that Rachel gets lumped in with this both sides crap, where because we criticize Fox News Channel and all the lies and punditry and ridiculousness that goes on there, somehow we have to pick someone from MSNBC to go along and be the sort of the same or the equal and opposite version of that. And it always ends up landing on Rachel Maddow for some reason, even though Rachel Maddow, I mean, I'm saying this as objectively as I can, which is next to impossible, but it's true, that Rachel Maddow is the genuine article. Rachel Maddow is as close to Walter Cronkite as we have on television news right damn now. And I'm enormously grateful for that. I think the New York Times is doing itself a real disservice. But saying all that, I don't think we should just go and say, okay, the New York Times sucks. I'm not going to read the New York Times anymore. I'm going to boycott. Childish. I'm not going to subscribe.
Yeah, childish.
It's exactly right. It's exactly childish.
Let's all slap tariffs on the New York Times.
That's right. It just doesn't. I mean, you know, look, I get it. Sometimes when they refuse to call Donald Trump's lies a lie, you know, you want to make the Jody noise. You want to just cry out in frustration. Yeah. But, you know.
Yeah. Well, all the mainstream media was reluctant. They were so freaking careful throughout the campaign to try to continue to be fair.
Yeah.
By the way, there's that car alarm.
I know. We're going to have the car alarm throughout the show. Thank you very much, whoever that is. I'm going to go put a brick through their windshield. I was stomping around the house before we started the show going, I'm calling the cops. God damn it. I'm calling the cops.
Just, God damn it.
Just screaming that off my balcony.
Yeah, well, a brick through the window will give them reason to come out.
That's right.
Those have been a great boon. I haven't car thefts really fallen since they put those in. You know.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of felt like one of those guys in one of those old-timey movies with the wife-beater T-shirt and the big gut with a cigar hanging out of his mouth, who sits on his porch and drinks beer and then shouts at all the passersby as they go on down. That was me for about 5 minutes before we started the show today.
I don't picture you in that shirt or with that belly, but you will be sitting on a balcony shouting those things. I guarantee it.
Absolutely right. It's like, damn it, someone's going to be held accountable for this car alarm, damn it.
To the issue at hand. I just had a couple of things about Rachel. The reason I watch is not to be indoctrinated. It's one of the things I do is I take screenshots of various resources that she
uses. Yeah.
And oftentimes these are the Washington Post and one of Rachel's favorite sources, the New York Times, and I'll snap those and then go find those stories, read them for myself, interpret them for myself.
Yeah.
So she introduces me or guides me to what, you know, the stuff we need to know. As far as what you said about her being, I don't know how Cronkite-y she is. I get what you're saying, that she's very close to that, but in much the same way that people with what were once considered moderate politics are now considered to be leftists.
Yeah.
And this has happened because the entire country, the spectrum, has moved farther to the right.
That's right.
It used to be more centered, and now it really leans hard right. So what used to be in the middle now seems to be on the left. And that is not only true in politics and political parties, but it's true, I think, in the case of the media, that she's more centrist. Yeah, not entirely. I mean, she's definitely on the blue side of the line. But she's closer to the center, I think, than she gets credit for. I think simply by virtue of the fact that she states these facts, that she assembles these facts, that alone puts her in the middle, because at least she's dealing with facts when so many in the media are not.
Yeah, and you know, she does such a fine job of taking all of these disparate news stories and stitching them all together and putting them in context and telling a story based around that. I mean, by story, I don't mean to say in the frivolous sense, as if she's reading as Goodnight Moon or something like that. I mean, in the,
no,
the,
but that's
the reporting
on a, she does
sense.
On a, and she does on a bigger scale what I've always tried to do myself is,
right.
is tell a story, make it interesting. If this is so freaking important, I mean, this is one of the first things I learned getting into radio news. If this stuff is so important, and clearly it is, how do we get people to listen? Because I know my friends are switching to the other station that's playing music when the news comes on. So how do I get their attention and keep their attention? So there's great value in her method. Sometimes it goes on, the tease goes on a little too long and it gets irritating. She hasn't done that for a while. There hasn't been time for it. But, you know, and there are times I yell at her, you know, and because I think she's gone too far or is wrong about something, is off the, and there have been a couple of cases where she was off the path a bit and never pursued that any further because it was the wrong path. And I've witnessed that, but she is a national treasure.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And not, you know, not the, I think it was my dad who said she's a kook. And I said, he actually has.
Oh, really?
Not a long time. Not since Trump was elected, I don't think. But he says she's a kook. And I said, she's a Rhodes Scholar.
Yeah.
He said, I don't care. She's a kook. You know,
and she's a smart kook.
Very, very, very smart. Extremely.
Yeah,
smart.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you notice, what she does is she's not pounding her fist on the table. She's not, in fact, expressing a whole lot of opinions. In fact, what she does, instead of saying, I believe this, and here's why you should agree with me, what she does is she just asks questions. She just throws the questions out. And sure, they're kind of leading questions because that's the whole point. That's the thesis.
A skill I've learned as well. Yes.
and so that's her approach. It's not, you know, fire and brimstone screaming into the television cameras for an hour.
Right.
I think that's one of the reasons why she may seem more moderate than she is, because she isn't a fire eater. She's not like, you know, sort of what we do on this show or what you hear in podcasting a lot, or certainly not what you see on Twitter. She is someone who is, she's, again, that's a great way to put it. She is much more restrained, much more prudent in terms of the information she puts out there. And remember, she's only repeating news, hard news that has been reported in the Washington Post, the New York Times, or the Wall Street Journal, or for that matter, NBC News. And that is it. She's not fishing for conspiracy theories. She's not delving into weird corners, dark areas of the political debate to grab things and use those to suit her own ends. Yeah, she's legitimate.
She doesn't do what if.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. So, you know, of course, for the New York Times to do this, again, what they're doing is they're just shooting themselves in the foot.
Trying to be fair, they think.
Yeah, they're trying to do it, but they're getting it wrong. Because, again, as I said at the top, it's both-siderisms. You know, that's what they're doing.
Yeah, and that's what the media, that's the mistake the media made with Trump. Instead of calling him out during the campaign and making people, making voters aware before they went to the polls, they tried to play it fair because they were afraid that they didn't want to be considered, you know, leaning one side or another. Facts are facts. Get them out there. If something's the truth, say so. If something's a lie, call it out for that. And if they had done that during the campaign, we might not be where we are today. So I certainly get that anger. And the Times is guilty of that. The Times helped, was part of the buildup of Donald Trump into the character that he became. They played a big role in that for a while. And he's mad at them now because they don't like him anymore.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think a lot of people miss that the New York Times, other publications like that, other papers of record, have a responsibility to the journalistic method. And I think sometimes with the New York Times, they really, really adhere close to that, almost to the point of going too far. It's exactly what I was about to say just then. but, you know, it's funny, speaking of the New York Times, there was this piece published a couple of weeks ago in the American Conservative, the AmericanConservative.com, and it was a op-ed by Peter Van Buren dated May 13th. So it took me a long time to find this. Didn't know about it. No one informed me that I was included in this piece, but it's an op-ed and it's sort of someone trying to be funny. How to write doomsday screeds like the pros. As long as haters believe Trump is bringing about the end times, you too can make a buck writing about it. Well, first of all, with all the talk of how many jobs have been created during the Trump administration.
Thanks, Obama.
Little attention is paid to one vibrant industry this time in the White House that the White House has spawned, writing apocalyptic op-eds. You know the ones, articles predicting whatever the news of the day will be, the end of democracy, alongside the New York Times and the Washington Post, whose op-ed pages are pretty much a daily end of days. Practitioners include Chicken Little regulars Rachel Maddow, Lawrence Tribe, Malcolm Nance, David Corn, Benjamin Wittes, Charlie Pierce, Bob Seska, and Marcy Wheeler. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Finally, one of these people includes me in the list of freaks and weirdos on the left. Every time I see like an enemies list, oh, the Trump people have an enemies list, or this religious group has an enemies list, I go immediately to that list, and I'm always disappointed when I don't see my name on the list. It's so sad is what happens. I think, for God's sake, I need to be on an enemies list or two, and thank God someone has. Now finally someone has included me on a list of Chicken Little. Yeah.
Congratulations. You finally made it. You must be very proud. You know, that article goes on. I did look that over, and it goes on for quite a long time. And they're not trying to be funny. The headline writer maybe was trying to be funny, and maybe that's the same author. But the article itself is not. And first of all, I want to know, how do you make money doing this?
Yeah.
And secondly, you know, this is him. This is a conservative telling the rest of us, pay no attention to his love of dictators.
Yeah.
Pay no attention to his circumvention of Congress. Pay no attention to his disparagement of the courts. This is all fine. This is all normal. Mm-hmm. These people who are upset about this, who are painting these doomsday portraits, are lunatics. They're kooks. they're out on a limb.
Yeah.
And the truth is, you're not. None of us are. Most of us aren't. What we're doing is stating the facts, which is this is what this president is doing as he inches, whether he'll ever succeed or not. And he's more of a dictator wannabe than he is a dictator. A lot of his stuff doesn't get carried out. But in his heart, that's what he is. And that alone is reason enough to be frightened, never mind the actions that he's taken to support the fear that he's changing our way of government.
Yeah.
And that is concerning. That is a crisis. It, historically, throughout the histories of the nation, has been considered crisis material. And so there's nothing alarmist about this. And I guess in some ways Trump has been good for business. I don't know about you, but I'm exhausted.
Me too. Just a little bit.
It hasn't been that good for business, but people's interest in this, rightly so, increased when they saw this lunatic in the White House.
Yeah. Well, I mean, some of us have done okay. By and large, whatever benefit people would have had by covering Donald Trump, like, oh, there's lots of material, lots of things to say about this guy, I guess we're going to be okay with content. Well, that's not entirely true, because what's happened is Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg came along and made it possible for countless, I mean, scores of journalists and op-ed writers and so on to get fired. And so there are, I don't know how many hundreds, if not thousands, of out of work people in political writing, political journalism there are right now, but there's quite a few. And thank God I'm not one of them, but I know many who are, including Kimberly Johnson and so many others, whose publications had to shut down because of Facebook's fuckery. And we all know the story behind that. But nevertheless, with this, you asked a few seconds ago, you said, how do you go about making money? Well, I have a two-step plan for that. Number one, say shit. You gotta first say shit.
Okay.
So there's
all
that.
Right. I'm gonna write that down.
Yeah. Number two, go on the Stephanie Miller show. And that's it. Number three, repeat. So I guess there is a third step. So just add the repeat at the end. That's the way it happens.
She's the stairway to heaven.
That's exactly. Well, I mean, if you look at this list, Malcolm Nance, Charlie Pierce, I don't know if Marcy Wheeler has been on the Stephanie Miller Show yet. Boy, I'd like to get her on my show, though. Empty Wheel on Twitter. She's been doing some of the best work. In fact, you rarely see Marcy Wheeler. It's so bizarre that they included her on this list because you barely see her ever raising her voice or sounding unhinged or anything along those lines. I won't speak for myself. I sound unhinged all the time. And Malcolm Nance refers to himself as Shouty McShoutface. So it's not hard to put those people together. Rachel Maddow never raises her voice. Lawrence Tribe, there's very few people who are more centered than Lawrence Tribe. David Korn, Benjamin Wittes, these are all pros. Charlie Pierce, I guess he raises his voice sometimes, but it's always with a joke. I felt like I was in good company there and just happy to be part of the list, though it is kind of an insulting thing. I realized that too. Well, let's see what else we have here going on today. Obviously, Biff is in England right now making an ass of himself and embarrassing the country. He, of course, referred to the mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, as a stone cold loser. And then today he was saying in a press conference that, Sadiq Khan, such a negative guy. Why does he have to be so negative? Why does he have to drag everything down into the mud? That's what Trump actually said today, doing his best gaslighting like always. But he's the guy who just referred to the mayor of London as a stone cold loser for being foolishly nasty to him.
Foolish and nasty.
Yeah.
And short.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and again, he's, it's the same stuff with this guy. It doesn't just same stuff, different country. He's in England right now doing the same shit he does here in the United States.
He can insult in many, many languages.
Right. Well, Jared Kushner is also with him. Well, all the Trump kids are with him for some reason. I don't know how does Don Jr. get invited for a state visit to England?
Well, he did. The fact of the matter is he wasn't. And here's what happened. The Queen invited specifically just Don and Imelda, what's her name? Melania, invited them to a state dinner, and she did not invite the kids. The kids were not included in the invitation, and then they all show up together. They brought the kids with them.
Yeah.
So that's how you do that. I love the fact that Trump says the big baby balloon of him. the protesters are carrying.
Yeah, I love that.
That makes him feel unwelcome, he said. I hope he gives that some thought.
It's so sad that he's feeling so unwelcome and ostracized in England.
The U.S. president. Yeah. And to think of it.
Well, they're getting to see it up close because he's seeing all these protests and going, they love me so much. They're the greatest. I love the British people. Look at all them turning out to cheer me and wish me well. They're screaming at him and hating him. That's what they're
doing. You saw the laser projections, I'm guessing.
Good ideas.
They're really good at protesting. They had the large penis that was carved into a field on approach to the airport.
That's right.
And it was in the act of urinating on his name.
Yeah,
welcome to England.
Right. And it's funny, they didn't try to disguise any of that shit. They didn't try to suddenly put masking tape and paper bags over all the windows of Air Force One to keep him from looking out the window like they did with the USS John McCain.
Maybe they should. There was one of the times he flew to the Middle East, I think, and he was terrified because he said they covered all the windows.
Yeah.
Now, maybe they just need to do that on all his trips.
Well, Jared Kushner sat down for an interview while he's over there, and
he
really underscored the idea that Jared Kushner shouldn't be doing interviews. In fact, this is kind of here's a preview of how Jared Kushner reacted to some of these questions about Trump being a racist.
Mr.
Kushner. Jared.
It's so hard to avoid the truth, and that's Stanley's trying to steer around the truth where possible, and he's just not mastered that yet.
Here's this great clip of Jared Kushner. One of the reasons I'm playing this is just to get a listen to his voice. We hear it so seldom, and maybe that's the way it should be, that we hear from Jared Kushner almost zero times. But here's Jared making an ass of himself and Trump and, well, for that matter, the rest of the nation.
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, she has called President Trump a racist. Mm-hmm. Have you ever seen him say or do anything that you would describe as racist or bigoted?
So the answer is no, absolutely not. You can't not be a racist for 69 years, then run for president and be a racist. And what I'll say is that when a lot of the Democrats call the president a racist, I think they're doing a disservice to people who suffer because of real racism in this country.
Was birtherism racist?
Mm. Look, I wasn't really involved in that.
I know you weren't. Was it racist?
Like I said, I wasn't involved in that.
I know you weren't. Mm-hmm. Was it racist?
Look, I know who the president is, and I have not seen anything in him that is racist. So again, I was not involved in that.
Did you wish he didn't do that?
Like I said, I was not involved in that. That was a long time ago.
The other issue that often gets brought up in this conversation is that he campaigned on banning Muslims. Would you describe that as religiously bigoted?
Look, I think that the president did his campaign the way he did his campaign.
He did. And I think but you wish he didn't. Do you wish he didn't make that speech?
I think he's here today, and I think he's doing a lot of great things for the country, and that's what I'm proud of.
Okay, sure. Yeah,
they're not answering.
Right, and you know what? This goes kind of to the salon piece that I wrote today, which is that, you know what? If you're going to be a dickbag and you're going to be a racist and you're going to especially work for an obviously racist president, just own your racism. Just, if you got to, just say that you're a racist. Just admit it, for God's sake. I'm sick and tired of this.
Story.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just sick and tired of this being the answer to everything. I don't know what to say. Everything's so confusing. I don't know what to do about these accusations. I
mean, at least they could come up with a story and sell it. You know, this hemming and hawing doesn't get them anywhere. Doesn't, you know, the question does not and did not get answered in this situation. Yeah. Who do you think slimier? Who just, and maybe based on appearance alone, Jared Kushner or Don Jr.? Which guy, which slicky boy
think
is the most nauseating?
Easy answer to that. Jr. is the slickiest of the slicky boys, with his hobo beard and his slick back hair, his pomade and his pear-shaped body and his ridiculous Twitter feed. I mean, there's nobody slimier. I mean, I think Don Jr. is slimier than his own dad. I think he's way slimier than Donald Trump. I think he's got zero moral core. And I think Donald Trump maybe has maybe 2%, maybe 1% of a moral, somewhere in there. Right. There's something that maybe kind of sort of resembles morality or values. It's completely non-existent in Don Jr. And I'm giving his dad way too much credit. I'm just hearing myself and going, 1%, what am I, crazy? 1% of 1%. Now I'm sounding like Bernie Sanders, but you know,
So Don Jr. by a greasy hair over morals.
Yes.
I see that. I see that. I agree with that. I just, but let us not forget the sort of expressionless Ken doll that Jared Kushner is.
That's true.
And what he ultimately, what he was actually defending in his stammered answers there.
Yeah, yeah. Just, they, at some point, Donald Trump just has to say it. I mean, at some point, it's just a matter of time, I guess, before he just blurts the N-word, or we hear it, or a tape of something along those lines, which we've heard reports about. Just for God's sake, own it. I just can't. I'm sick and tired. And this goes across the board, across the entire political debate. All of our political leaders are so afraid to say what they believe, to just be out front. And I'm not talking about sticking it in your face and being a dick about it. I'm just talking about owning your position. Stop trying to pretend that you're something you're not. Just be a Democrat. If you're running for president on the Democratic side, stop apologizing for being a Democrat. Stop tiptoeing on eggshells around the moderates. They'll come
along.
It's
not like you're, it's not like you're journalists or anything.
Yeah, right, right.
Same syndrome, though, isn't it? Isn't it the same syndrome?
Yes, just a bit.
Yeah,
exactly. Right.
Democrats are trying to be stately and fair, and journalism was trying to be stately and fair. And you know what? The gloves are off. We're past that. We're the president has pushed us past that point.
Right, right. And again, it's so easy to look at this stuff, see these events as they whiz on by our faces, whether it's with Russia or whether it's all of Donald Trump's egregiousness. And it's so easy to go, Well, we'll get him next time. I don't know. It's going to be risky if we hold him accountable. He may like it. He may abuse it. He may benefit from it. And I'm just do what you got to do and let the chips fall where they may.
A growing number of lawmakers are saying, not publicly, but among themselves, and this is good because it's a building momentum. It's a dam about to burst is what it is. But they're saying to themselves, look, this is inevitable. This is going to happen. Mm-hmm. We may as well just start. And as we learn, I think you and T-Rex and Jody talked about this last Thursday. If you look at the impeachment timeline of Richard Nixon, you see that the public opinion opinion needle didn't move.
Yeah,
I say it makes needle and move together. You get noodle. The needle on public opinion didn't move until the impeachment hearings began.
That's
when everything changed. And that's why we need to have them now and without further delay. And before we get too far away from the topic of race, I've got a piece in my news on Thursday that I've just been working on about the black vote factor here. Yeah. Black lawmakers, African-American communities around the country, the constituents are telling their representatives, why is he still here? Why haven't you impeached? Yeah. We voted for you to get rid of him.
That's right.
Why haven't you done it yet? And so the Black Caucus, or most of the Black Caucus, is now applying pressure on Pelosi. Why is this important? Well, it couldn't be more important. It was Black voters who prevented the impeachment of Bill Clinton, his removal from office after once he had been impeached. It was Black voters who won, helped with Democrats, young Black voters helped the Democrats win in the 2018 midterm elections. It was Black voters who got Barack Obama elected, who pushed him over the top there. The Black voters couldn't be more important to the Democratic Party right now. And if they're truly interested in 2020, they should listen to them because it's like, what is it? 48% of white voters want Trump impeached.
Yeah. Yeah.
87% of Black voters want him impeached.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to your voters.
That's right.
Listen to the voters who made the differences in the elections and the situations that were just cited here. This is part of the pressure that's building on them to get to the inevitable without further delay. We are headed there anyway. Let's get it the heck started.
Yeah, and I get the sense that African-American voters especially recognize what Trump is and in a way that's more clarifying and real than I think a lot of white voters see Donald Trump.
And if you want them to go to the polls in 2020, if you don't want them to be dispirited, if you want them to vote for your candidates in 2020, you'd better listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, that also goes for the 63% of Hispanics who want Trump impeached.
Yeah, yeah.
While a very white bread 48% of whites want him impeached.
Hey, look, you know what?
Well, we can't really decide.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing. I mean, people are thirsty for leadership right now. And it goes back to that speech Michael J. Fox in the American President movie by Aaron Sorkin with Michael Douglas and Martin Sheen was in there too. The statement was something along the lines of Americans are so starved for leadership that they'll move toward that oasis thinking, that person's the leader. And when it turns out not to be leader, they'll still just drink the sand, instead of the quenching water that they're craving, they'll just drink the sand because it's the next best thing. That's why Donald Trump rises in this country.
That's the other lesson from Watergate here. And people are going to get tired of these references. And many people, including the guy who wrote that column slamming you, and other opinion writers, what they're getting wrong here is it when impeachment hearings started in 1973, the American public was not on board.
Yeah, no.
Most of the public was against impeachment when the impeachment hearings began, just as they would be now if the impeachment hearings were beginning. It wasn't until the impeachment hearings themselves that the needle began to move on public opinion.
Yeah.
So, again, it's inevitable. It's going to happen. Why wait a second longer.
Yeah, and I just feel like so much time has gone by already where we were powerless and therefore watching this as it becomes metastasized, as it becomes normalized across the country, Trumpism and Trump's behavior and Trump's crimes. It seems like this was something that could have been stopped before it ever began, and we just didn't take it seriously enough. But minorities from coast to coast in this country, African-Americans, certainly Latinos and Hispanics, we're saying Islamic Americans and so on. We're seeing Donald Trump as the ghoul, as the criminal, as the villain that he is. And so many of us were like, well, let's wait for Mueller or
it seems kind of extreme.
Yeah. And it's long past time now. We've held the reins of power in the House of Representatives and the control. We've got our hands on the toggles for impeachment. We just need to find the balls and the backbone to throw that switch at long last and move forward with this, goddammit. If for no other reason than to show history that this guy was a criminal, get it on record, get the evidence on record, and make this historic. It needs to be. Otherwise, more Trumps are down the road waiting for us.
We're already late. If you use the Watergate timeline, and this is one thing that may not apply to the present day, but if you go by the Watergate timeline, we should be able to impeach him a couple of years after a couple of months after the new president is sworn in 2020, whoever that may be. The point is that will be too late if we take as long. So not only do we have to do it right the freak now, but we've got to do it as quickly as possible, and we have to do it faster than we did in the early to mid-1970s.
All right, well, we're going to come back to all of this, but now it's time to talk about Bugger Off Bomb Bug Repellent at buggeroffbomb.com. Buzz, I was down at my mom's lake house a couple of weekends ago, and I ended up with one of those mosquito bites that never quits, right? And this is obviously because I forgot to use my Bugger Off Bomb once I went down there. And it was this mosquito bite right on the top of my foot. And you ever have one of those mosquito bites where the bite itself not only itches, but then there are phantom itches all around? Like, wait, is there one on my other foot? What's going on here?
I haven't heard of that. You should see a doctor. But I know the agony. I know the agony of having an itchy bump there on your ankle there.
It's the worst.
It never stops itching.
Yeah, and sometimes you'll itch it so much, you scratch it so much. I've ended up scratching the skin like clean off, like the top layer of skin in the middle of the night, just scratching it while I'm half asleep. It's horrible.
Right.
None of this would have happened if I had my Bugger Off Bomb. And as you know, Buzz, and I know you're like me, you hate the itching, but you don't mind the swelling. So there's that trade-off. Right. There's a little bit of an upside there in getting mosquito bites. But if you're tired of bug bites, you've come to the right spot. Bugger Off Bomb was created to swear off all the pesky mosquitoes that plague all of us every season. Straightforward ingredients, never anything toxic in Bugger Off Bomb. It's easy to travel with in a little teeny tiny tin that fits in your pocket. It's made specifically. Oh, and it's not going to leak or squirt out all over your luggage or in your pocket or anything like that. Yeah, I hate it when things squirt out in my pocket.
No bugs.
That's right. No bugs at all. It's made specifically for everyone. For example, fishermen, hikers, soccer moms, beachgoers, cruelty-free skincare enthusiasts, your Uncle Joe, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Everyone can use Bugger Off Bomb. Yeah, because it's free of nasty chemicals. It's DEET-free. It's kind to humans and the environment. It contains two key ingredients for fighting pesky bugs and other creepy crawlies, eucalyptus and citronella. It's all in there. It also contains non-GMO soybean oil, beeswax, thyme, rosemary, cedarwood, geranium, basil, eucalyptus, and citronella essential oils, as I said there a second ago. Also, great seasoning for your backyard barbecue. I'm kidding about the seasoning part.
By the way, attempt this at home.
Yeah, that's right. By the way, holy hell, it smells way better than any store-bought repellents. Bugger Off smells clean and fresh, and it won't stain your clothing. Plus, no more skeeter bites. It's another line of defense against any insect-borne diseases. Just $10.95 at buggeroffbomb.com, but use our promo code BOBC for 15% off your entire order. Again, Again, that's buggeroffbomb.com, promo code BOBC for 15% off your order. Support this show by supporting Bugger Off Bomb and stay bug-free all summer long.
Hey, this is Frangela, and we host The Final Word with Frangela and Idiot of the Week podcast. And if you enjoyed this episode, you'll love our show, where every week we talk about real news, real funny. So come on over and listen to The Final Word with Frangela and find it at sexyliberal.com and on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, and everywhere else you get your podcast.
The Bob Seska Show.
The Bob Seska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
Okay, so I really screwed up the other day. I was doing the indie music countdown. I recorded that on Saturday. I debuted it on Sunday. And I made two key mistakes. So this is by way of a correction on the indie music countdown. By the way, this is Quiver and a song called Radiate. I was thinking about radiation, obviously, because we watched episode five of Chernobyl last night. God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Such a masterpiece. Anyway, I digress. So not only did I leave off Quiver from the countdown entirely, it was a clerical error. I forgot to write it down when I originally aired the song on the show. It was a song called Superheroes, which I'm going to play again after the next break, provided we get to a second break on today's show. So I forgot to play that song by Quiver, which would have made a 19-song countdown instead of just an 18-song countdown. And then on top of all of that, I miscredited one of our indie recording artists, Jim George, with something that another indie recording artist on the countdown, Aiton Mirsky, did. So Aiton Mirsky had a song in the movie American Splendor, and I said during the countdown, because I'm just winging it, I said, oh yeah, Jim George, he had a song in American Splendor, you know, the Paul Giamatti movie about Harvey Pekar and all that. It wasn't Jim George, it was Aiton Mirsky.
There's a danger in ad-libbing. There is a danger in ad-libbing.
I don't know what I was thinking. I said, hey, it's a great idea, I'll do a DJ show and play all these songs and I'll just wing it like I used to. And clearly I'm out of practice.
Well, you'll be fine. Listen, I yesterday made it a point to listen to all three of the music shows you've done in succession.
Wow.
I think I'd heard them all before, except for the newest one. So I was listening to the newest and its two predecessors. Man, if you want a playlist for your day, this is awesome. Can you be on longer? Because I want you to be the soundtrack of my day, because I enjoy the show so much. I enjoy that music. It's familiar sort of to me and refreshing in that way, but at the same time it's new, and you know, when you hear the same songs over and over and over again, it's nice to hear this new music, and these are, as we've said before, great artists. This is a great way to soundtrack your day, is just play Bob's music show one after the other, and then when you get to the end, start over and play them again.
Yeah, in fact, there are so few shows like that. Certainly, very few podcasts like that, because the whole economy of playing music on a podcast is a little dicey. A lot of people don't have the money to pay licensing fees and so on. I've just gotten lucky insofar as all these recording artists have submitted all of their music to me. They're saying, here, Bob, play my music. And I'm going, wow, this is incredible music. And yeah, there is a little bit of curation that goes on, where I look through their entire discography and all their songs. Mm-hmm. I say, you know, I think my listeners enjoy this one. And so I'll pick that, pick a particular song, because I think it fits into the style of banter that we have on the show. It has that same rhythm or that same appeal. And so that's the whole idea. But I mean, 99.9% of it is the quality of the music. It's not how it's assembled. It's just a bunch of great songs. In this case, Sunday, that particular countdown, the most recent indie music countdown, 18 songs, and running the entire gamut from hip hop to alternative to, you know, like 90s grunge almost.
Yeah, I want you to get to like 20 songs, because like I said, I'd like the show to be a little longer, and I'm more comfortable with 20.
Right.
Just I like the number better. But also, yeah, would you have a chance to hear, and you're going to get to the point, if you're not there already, where you can bypass certain songs in favor of songs you like better. This can become your top 20 of indie songs that have been submitted, and I think that's very exciting too. By the way, I have something that'll cheer you up about that whole kerfuffle there. with your music show.
Oh, okay.
Paul Manafort. Yeah, New York prosecutors are transferring Trump's ex-campaign chairman to the notorious jail complex Rikers Island.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
As he awaits trial on state fraud charges. So it's off to Rikers for Paul.
Oh, wow. And you know what? Yeah. I don't even have the right music for this, but I'm going to try to bring it up as we talk.
You need like happy music for this. Happy Days Are Here Again.
Well, something. No, I mean, I was thinking like this. I was thinking about the Oz theme.
Oh, that's, well, that's yeah. That's kind of where that would immediately follow Happy Days Are Here Again.
It's this kind of a prison that he's going to. Maybe not like the Emerald City set from the show Oz.
It's badass.
Like, the general population. Apparently, he's going to be in solitary there.
Yes,
and I was just thinking like rusty government steel bars and just the shittiest possible prison. Everyone's like, I saw one guy who was like, I can't believe they're sending him there. That's so cruel to send him to Rikers. Rikers should be shut down.
He could have flipped. He could have flipped and avoided this. I didn't see him taking this gag this far. I didn't see him going to solitary at Rikers. I thought at some point he would cave and say, no, I don't think I want to go to solitary at Rikers.
Well,
and there's that car alarm again.
Yeah, I know. I was just going to say, I might end up being a cellmate of Paul Manafort after I murder the person with that fucking car alarm.
No. But it'd be a shame if anything happened to that car.
Yeah, no. Just
anyway.
Where's my baseball bat? I have a baseball bat around here somewhere. The fact is that Paul Manafort's the latest Trump stooge to go to jail for his messiah, for his cult leader.
He's not just going down. He's going all the way down. He's going to solitary at Rikers. Let us emphasize.
Rikers.
This is not nice.
Yeah.
This is not pretty. This is not fun. This is hell.
Yeah.
And he's willing to do that instead of flip on Trump. Yeah. What the heck? Who has what on him?
Yeah. And you know what? I'm totally fine with him going to Rikers, as much of a shithole as Rikers is. You know, it's not Murder in the First. It's not Kevin Bacon and Murder in the First. It's not that horrible. It's not Alcatraz. But as far as prisons go, Rikers is kind of up there with Alcatraz. So
I'll bet the prison library has Will by G. Gordon Liddy. I'll bet they have. And then he can get... And then he can get tips on survival in a brutal prison situation.
Oh, shit. Yes, that's right. Absolutely. Well, at least he has that. At least he'll have G. Gordon Liddy to look forward to.
He'll be growing a mustache and eating rats before you know it.
Burning his hand over an open flame. The secret is not minding. Everyone loved our G. Gordon Liddy conversation from last week. He said, you know what? You should do an entire show in which you do nothing but tell G. Gordon Liddy stories. It's still, you know what? We bring it up like this, and it still amazes me that you and I worked in the same, basically the same room as Watergate burglar G. Gordon Liddy. My God.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it really is. And for the reasons that we talked about before, I think, though, we need to be careful and use it as seasoning from this point forward.
That's true.
We're going to ration the Liddy stories for when we really need them.
Although from now on, I'm pronouncing the number 9 as Niner. I'm going to say Niner from now on. So Paul Manafort and another guy to go to jail for Donald Trump. Looks like Hope Hicks and Annie Donaldson are going to end up in jail for Donald Trump. I mean, I'm wondering where this is going to go. NBC News confirmed today that the White House has directed Hope Hicks and Annie Donaldson not to turn over documents related to her time in the Trump administration. They're supposed to not turn over these documents to Congress, apparently, which is what Donald Trump is commanding them to not do. The two faced a subpoena deadline today. So, I mean, the real question is not only how many Trump loyalists are going to go to jail to protect their shitty, shitty cult leader, but why? Why are they doing this? Why is there such loyalty to Donald Trump?
Let's see how far these individuals are willing to go.
Yeah.
You know, they may not want to suffer the fate of Paul Manafort or anything, or even the fate of Michael Cohen, for that matter. I'm not sure if they're willing to take the hit on this. We'll see. I'd be very surprised if they did. I think I mentioned way early on in your show, a couple of years ago maybe, that I found Hope Hicks to be fetching. I thought she was a very attractive
easy
woman.
On the eyes,
And I recalled a photograph in which she was wearing a tuxedo, and she had her head turned toward the camera. It was over her shoulder. It was there's nothing more attractive than a woman looking over her shoulder. And so
why is that?
That's a good. Here's this. Well, it's I don't know some DNA thing that goes back to cavemen.
I think so.
Mm-hmm. But she this is this very attractive young woman looking over her shoulder in a tux for crying out loud.
Yeah.
Oh my God, she looked like a million bucks in that thing. And so I will not discuss her in a prison uniform. It's not going to happen. I'm not going to.
We're not naming names and we're not naming fetishes.
No, we're not. We're not. But I don't. And I like to think maybe she's smarter than that, that she's not the sort of mafia thug that Paul Manafort is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it looks like not only will Hope Hicks see now this again. This is going to be the in the form of a political cold shower buzz for you because we're going to go from Hope Hicks in a prison uniform to Bill Barr in a prison uniform.
I thought you were going to say George Nader.
Well, maybe George Nader, too. We're going to get to him in just a second. But, you know, the same goes for Bill Barr and Don McGahn. It seems like they're both going to end up in prison for Donald Trump for some reason. And Bill Barr apparently thinks it's hilarious because he saw Nancy Pelosi last week or the week before and was joking about it. So, well, now I don't think it's going to be as funny once he's carted off.
I don't think they will jail the attorney general. Who was the other guy you mentioned again? I'm sorry.
Don McGahn.
Don McGahn. Yeah, they might jail him. As an attorney, I can only see McGahn taking this so far.
Yeah.
Before he says, okay, look, here's the deal. And he's already cooperated a great deal. I think at some point he has to. We'll see. I mean, we just have to wait and see how this plays out. In the meantime, I guess Congress is going to forge ahead with its own bizarre little hearings, starting with John Dean from the Watergate era.
Oh, yeah.
John Dean! Damn it! What a traitor John Dean is. I hate John Dean.
See, now I'm going back to Liddy again.
I know.
I apologize for that. But June 11, that's when they're going to vote. The entire House on the floor is going to vote on contempt charges against Bill Barr and Don McGahn. June 11th, mark your calendar, because we'll wait and see what happens there.
But will that result in their imprisonment or jailing? I'm not sure that it will. We're just going to have to wait and see what happens after that. After that vote.
Why don't you let me have my fantasy, man? My God.
Listen, there's nothing I'd love to see. Here's another. Yeah, William Barr in a prison uniform. Now we're talking about looking over his shoulder. See there, now you've got a photograph. But I would love more.
Bonus, Bill Barr's boobs are a little bit bigger than Hope Hicks's.
Well, I wasn't looking. I was looking at her face. Her face is up here. His face is up there, Bob.
That's true. I said, if I've heard it once, I've heard it 1,000 times. When I bump into Bill Barr at a party and he goes, Bob, my face is up here, damn it. Stop staring at my cleavage. Did you see, by the way, Donald Trump had neck cleavage going on in England. That was the first thing I spotted in that official photo with the Queen, as he had quite a scrotal sack going on under his chin there.
And he looks so good in that tailcoat, too, the waistcoat.
Yeah, that's right. Of course, a guy who claims to be a billionaire can never find a decent fitting suit ever. To me, that was the first tip off that this guy's deeply and profoundly in debt to Russia and whoever the hell else, Deutsche Bank and so on. Yeah.
Just a schlub.
Yeah, I think he gets all of his suits from like TJ Maxx or something. Like sends Eric in and gets all of his suits. My God, the giant pants and the ill-fitting waistcoat and the God damn it.
I'm sure that it's quality clothing. What happens is when your waistline gets that big, and I can speak as someone who was never that big but was bigger.
Yeah.
What happens is that big waist pushes the belt line, pushes the waistband of the pants downward. And then that's why you got the photograph. I don't even remember. Was it John Oliver or somewhere? I saw the photograph of Trump with his suit pants. They were all crumpled up at the top of his shoes because they had slid down. Well, his large waist had pushed down the waistband. I know the physics of this.
Yeah.
The large waist pushed down the waistband to his hips, and that made the pants too long.
Right, right.
And so, yeah, and again, he just looked like in a cemetery. This is why he looks like a schlub.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know what? In fact, that was something that Chez always noticed about Trump, is these really poorly fitting suits. And I think one of the reasons is that he has Trump very, very narrow shoulders, almost non-existent shoulders. So what he does is he gets these giant shoulder pads to pad out his shoulders. And what they end up doing is they end up after an hour or so, they end up slouching down. And so it's just like this mess of fabric and ill-fitting clothing, in which he probably looked at himself in the mirror that morning and went, all right, well, this is okay, I guess. And then walked out of the residence of the White House. And then suddenly, like an hour later, all of that preening and everything falls straight to hell. His hair gets fucked up. I'll never, ever willingly compliment Donald Trump. But you know what? His hair was so much better after that hat head. When he went into that church in McLean and he took his hat off and his hair was kind of... Yeah, I thought it looked better than whatever the fuck is going on. Swirl on his head.
What doesn't, you know?
Yeah, I guess anything would look better than that.
It was odd. Yeah, you know, I mean, I saw somebody post online, I'm an atheist and I wouldn't go into a church wearing a hat. and yet he did. And that's true. And as someone who's not of organized religion myself, I too, if I wore hats, would take it off on entering the church, because I know how to be polite and show respect. It's something he clearly doesn't know. You don't have to be a Christian to know that you're supposed to take off your hat when you enter a house of worship, whatever the religion may be. And by the way, that minister of the McLean Bible Church there in Northern Virginia, where Trump appeared in his golf cleats, wandered onto the altar in his golf cleats and his sweaty head, his sweaty hat head. That the pastor has today said, listen, this was in no way an endorsement of Trump. The pastor is now separating himself from this as much as possible. This is one of these big pop churches, you know, where they use the projectors and the modern music and all that, and it's a big auditorium kind of thing.
Yeah, you know what? Here's what happened. Donald Trump thought it was a Ruby Tuesday. So he just wandered in. I gotta get myself a blooming onion and.
Magoo, you've done it again.
Wait, this is an Arby's. Shit. Oh, it's
which,
a
by the way, stands for roast beef.
That's right. Well, okay. Speaking of roast beef, George Nader. I don't know where I came up with that segue, but you know, I've coupled George Nader with roast beef.
We'll edit that out.
We'll let the control room take care of that. Yeah. So creepy George Nader nabbed for child pornography again. Right? This is the guy.
And they weren't even looking for it. They were looking for Trump, Russia, Saudi evidence.
That's right.
When they snagged his phone and, look, it's young boys.
Yeah. And I wonder, has anyone asked Donald Trump about this guy? I mean, George Nader visited the White House a bunch of different times.
Barely knew him. Coffee boy.
Yeah, right. Coffee boy. Sure. Yeah. He was the guy who organized that. He organized that Seychelles meeting with Eric Prince and all these other villains.
And a Russian.
Yeah, yeah. And and he seems to be really into the child porn. And of course, at one point too, he was nabbed for molestation as well. So quality individuals, these are the best people that Donald Trump has around.
Yeah, right. Around George Nader, here's what you have to know. George Nader's been in the White House many, 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 many,
yes!
many times. He's been there a lot. He has been the liaison, the conduit between the Trump administration and Saudis. And to a certain degree, between the Trump administration and Russia.
Yep.
This is the quality of individual you have. He can walk and chew gum at the same time. He can betray his country and molest children all at the same time.
Yeah, bonus. You know, everyone's got a multi. People. Everyone has to multitask, don't you think?
Best people.
All right, let's take one last break, and we'll wrap up the show right after these
words.
Shower
off.
You can't always get a clean you can feel good about inside and out unless you're using Bubble Genius Bath and Body Products. See, Bubble Genius is a woman-owned small business proudly creating our vegan-friendly products in America and supporting other U.S. businesses by buying our ingredients and supplies from them as often as possible. Plus, you'll be hard-pressed to find packaging as recyclable as ours. Visit BubbleGenius.com and check out our cause-related items, too, like our global warming soap and a lot more. We donate our proceeds for those items to worthy causes, like organizations combating climate change and mountaintop removal mining. Good stuff like that. We also send our products to the troops overseas through our Buy a Soldier a Shower campaign. Because the least we can do is keep them smiling and smelling great, right? So visit BubbleGenius.com and feel good and clean. Bubble Genius, doing our part to make the world a better place, one bathtub at a time. That's BubbleGenius.com.
Bob Seska!
And when you keep us in the dark, our love will soon become a farce. We'll have no truth to call our own. You'll have to make it on your own.
Yeah, you know what this is? Buzz, it's two for Tuesday.
Really? I like
yeah.
it.
Two songs by Quiver. Boston's own Quiver. And by the way, that's spelled with three V's in there.
Of course it is.
Three V's, right?
Of course it is. Now, I really like this cut. This cut I'm really, really strong on.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? I don't think they even exist anymore. I think Quiver is no longer a working band.
Then I'm just in time.
Yeah, exactly. Right? We're just right on the cusp of Quiver mania. But you know what? Christina, who is one of the main members of Quiver, I said to her via email, I said, you got to get the band back together. So I'm working on that. Reuniting Quiver for a, you know, maybe like a 2020 world tour or something like that. So hopefully
she's got that looking back over your shoulder kind of voice.
Exactly right. Hopefully
I don't know what's wrong with me today.
I don't know. You're just really, you know what it is? It's obviously it's the stress. It's the mayhem going around us. At some point,
you know, apart at the seams.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we both need like legitimate breaks. And I know
I saw somebody say this and I echo their sentiment. You suck at taking vacation.
I really, really do. I was like, you know what? I got to take off an entire week, and I ended up doing shows during the week.
And you not know what only I'm going to do after the show's finished here? I thought about this before the show. Now yeah. I know I'm going to do it. After the show, I'm texting you a picture of my swimming pool. I'm texting you a photo of your guest room.
Yeah.
And we're gonna make this happen. You won't be able to say no when I finish.
All right. Well, maybe that's in the offing. I'm not sure yet. But my God, you know, again, I go back to the same old shit. It's the same old metaphor with Kramer on the bus with the pinky toe. You know, he kept making all the stops because they kept ringing the bell. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
I do the same thing, and it really is. I mean, I don't necessarily want people to feel sorry for me. In fact, I don't. Yeah. But let me just state for the record, it's hard. It's really, really hard to just keep doing this and keep doing this. And you think, well, it goes back to the question, the statement we made earlier, which is this is inevitable. What needs to happen here? What's going to happen here? Why the delay? Why is the inevitable taking so long?
Yeah, I know. And it goes back to this ongoing thesis that I've been developing, which is that the Democrats need to own their positions. I wrote a salon piece, as I said earlier. I want to make something abundantly clear here and now, which is that I'm not endorsing Elizabeth Warren yet. I'm not endorsing Kirsten Gillibrand either. I just pointed two things out from the last 24, 48 hours in which both of those candidates owned their position. I mean, one of the greatest things I've seen on video over the past several months is Elizabeth Warren marching in that pride parade with a big giant rainbow feather boa on, fist pumping and high-fiving and owning every step of that march. And that was an amazing thing to observe. Not saying, well, maybe on one hand we do, you know, same-sex marriage. On the other hand, you know, we have to respect the people in the red states.
On the other hand, Bob, I'm gonna steal their line for that.
Okay.
But what we're seeing, that's what you want. That's what I want.
Yeah.
That's what a lot of our listeners want. I understand that we, more than anybody, crave this leadership, and I want a little story about that as well. Instead, what's happening in reality is, as I joked about at the beginning of the show, at least at this point, and I know it's crazy early, and usually whatever is the prediction is at this point turns out to be wrong, and we know that Biden is prone to goofing up.
Equivocating,
but,
yeah.
But right now, he's at the pack, and what that's telling analysts, and I have to agree to this to a large extent, is what America wants right now is normalcy. Something a little bit middle of the road. And the other thing to remember, going back to our vital black voters, they're much of the wind beneath Biden's wings.
Mm-hmm.
Much of his support, almost ironically, when you consider Kamala Harris in the race and others, going to Joe Biden. It's partly that Obama legacy. It's partly they like him. You know, they feel like they can trust him. And the rest of America, I think, to a large extent, sees Biden as this very normal kind of guy who's more of a known than an unknown. Unknown didn't work out, or at least politically, unknown didn't work out so well last time. So I see why things are the way they are at the moment, and I realize that they can change. But on the subject of leadership, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
And again, going back to Watergate, it wasn't until they started the hearings that public opinion began to change. In other words, in the early to mid 1970s, Congress led the nation into impeachment. They didn't wait for the nation to lead them into impeachment. They led. They were leaders. They took the initiative. And this could change for Biden, especially as the leaders that we're seeing coming forward in the presidential race and in Congress, if they actually do lead and take the lead and lead this nation, then new heroes will arise, like Elizabeth Warren, for example, or whoever you like so far in the race. So there's still time for, I think, anybody to succeed in this race. But it's going to be the people who lead. I think you're right about that.
Yeah, is exactly right. You know, I think people are craving that. I think people are craving leadership. They're certainly, as you said, craving normalcy. Make no mistake about that either. I always thought that a winning campaign slogan for 2020 could be a return to normalcy. And that's
yes. Oh, I agree.
Yeah.
Totally agree.
Yeah.
There it is. Bob and Buzz in 2020.
Right.
Return
right.
to normalcy.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, again, there's no rocket science here. It's shocking to say this, I know, but, you know, when you actually say what you believe, people right. tend to go along. It's one respect. Of the strangest things in the world that you, that's a thing? Well, yes,
it's
of course
it's a thing.
Yeah.
It's what the base loves about Trump.
Exactly
he
right.
He says what he believes or what he, you know, he says what they believe.
Yeah.
I think, and that's what they like about
it. Exactly. And it doesn't matter what he's saying. He's saying it with this degree of conviction. And we all know it's bullshit. Obviously, I'm not saying that it's genuine in any stretch of the imagination. But when he says something that is absolute bullshit, he looks in the camera and says it as if he actually means it. And
it's exploitive.
Yeah.
It's exploitive. Yeah. He's exploiting that base.
Yes. Mm-hmm, that's right. And the advantage that the Democrats have is the advantage of having facts and truth and reality on their side. And all they need to do is weaponize that by stating the truth and stating what they believe in. And it's just that simple. I think you get a lot of moderates, a lot of undecided voters, some independents too, who will go along with someone who just doesn't fuck around and says, you know what, this is what I think, and this is how I think we should proceed as a country. This is what I think we should do about Donald Trump, and fight me. Go ahead and fight me. I don't care. This is how it is, and this is what I believe. And I think that's what needs to happen, right?
Yeah, that's definitely an important part of it. It absolutely is.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, you know what? One thing I want to talk about, and this is something going back to our discussion of no vacations ever. They keep ringing the bell, damn it. They keep ringing it. I could have spent a good long portion of my Sunday arguing with Fox News Channel's Dan Bongino, as we like to call him, Deca Dan Bong Bong. Decadam Bong Bong was going after the guy who created and produced and wrote all of the episodes of Chernobyl. And and so I posted that exchange where this guy, Craig Mazin, really nailed Dan Bongino. And then Dan Bongino started coming after me, like, obsessively. Yeah. In fact, he came after me so hard he had to unblock me first and then start attacking me on Twitter. And you know what I did?
I just sat there and laughed. I didn't play into it. I didn't feed the troll. I didn't react. I just I'm making progress, damn it.
Baby steps.
I am You'll healing. Okay. I am getting better. I swear to God.
What's the matter with Bob? That's the question.
And so this is a case where I could have been fished in and I could have wasted an entire day of my weekend arguing with someone as inconsequential as Dan Bongino, formerly of the NRA TV. Son of a bitch.
Instead, you made us a great music show.
Yeah, all I did was pointed and laughed with my mouth open at his giant bulbous forehead. That's what I was doing the whole time. And I trolled him in a way that he couldn't let it go. I successfully trolled Dan Bongino. It was like a reverse trolling thing. It was awesome. So we're going
to
talk.
Mr. Seska, your hour is up, but we're going to have to pursue this further in a next session.
That's exactly right. I've got the details of my Dan Bongino story on Twitter. We're going to save that for the postmortem show coming up next year at BobSeskaShow.com. That is our Patreon page. Go and sign up for $5 a month. For that $5, you will get 2 postmortem shows a week. And that is where we just keep on talking after this song finishes playing. So it's all kinds of great extra bonus content. If you sign
Hard to believe.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you sign up for $10, though, you get the 2 postmortem shows and the after party show on Fridays. Meanwhile, Buzz Burbank News and Comment every Thursday. BuzzBurbank.com, RealmNetwork.com, RELMNetwork.com. Find it, listen to it. It is the best hour of news you're going to hear all week. I swear to God. And it's... I guess no New York Times people have said, we're not going on Buzz anymore. You don't have to worry about
That's the kind of show it is.
That's exactly right. Take care, folks. See you then. Bye-bye.